TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Palestine is Still the Issue, by historian Ilan Pape. This is the conclusion of a thought-provoking 45-minute speech by the Israeli professor Ilan Pape. He spoke in Berkeley, California in May 2016 at the anniversary of the Middle East Children's Alliance. That's a nonprofit humanitarian aid organization. They provide food, medicine, books, and school supplies to children and families in Palestine, Iraq, and Lebanon. Ilan Pape is the author of many books, among them The Idea of Israel, A History of Power and Knowledge, The Bureaucracy of Evil, The History of the Israeli Occupation, and The Forgotten Palestinians, A History of the Palestinians in Israel. Most famous among his books is The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine. Using declassified British and Israeli documents, Pape comes up with a history that contradicts the official narrative. In the introduction to the book, it says, "The 1948 Palestine-Israel War is known to Israelis as the War of Independence, but for Palestinians it will forever be the Nakba, the catastrophe. Alongside the creation of the State of Israel, the war led to one of the largest forced migrations in modern history. Around 1 million people were expelled from their homes at gunpoint. Civilians were massacred, and hundreds of Palestinian villages deliberately destroyed. Though the truth about the mass expulsion has been systematically distorted and suppressed, had it taken place in the 21st century, it could only have been called ethnic cleansing." Prominent Israeli academic Ilan Pape argues passionately for the international recognition of this tragedy. End quote. Pape's position brought high acclaim and, of course, serious criticism. Richard Falk, professor emeritus at Princeton, said, "Pape has written an extraordinary book that is of profound relevance to the past, present, and future of Israel-Palestine relations." For Pape, the publication eventually brought about his exile, so to speak, from Israel. There were personal attacks on him in the Israeli government and academia. He left Israel in 2008 and began teaching at the University of Exeter in Britain. There he's currently the director of the university's European Center for Palestine Studies. In part one of this talk, Pape introduced the term settler colonialism. As opposed to colonialism, where land is occupied and resources extracted, but in the end, the colonizers go back home. In the new movement of settler colonialism, the settlers come with a one-way ticket and make the occupied land their home. According to Ilan Pape and the author Patrick Wolf, this occurred in South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Israel, the United States, and elsewhere. In order to clear the land for the new settlers, the indigenous peoples were killed, expelled, or forcibly assimilated. Pape said in his May 2016 speech in Berkeley that it is very important to talk about settler colonialism in the U.S. Many of the new settlers escaped from Europe because they were persecuted. How was it possible for these formerly persecuted groups to become the oppressors of Native Americans in turn? And in Israel, where Ilan Pape was born in 1954, the formerly persecuted Jews are now the oppressors of Palestinians. And in a huge historic irony, the old settler colonialist state of North America protects the new settler colonialist state of Israel from being held responsible for human rights violations. While the U.S. still needs to come to terms with its own settler colonialism, that task for Israel, ironically, is somewhat simpler. While in the U.S., depending on the source, 70 to 90% of the indigenous population was killed, the ethnic cleansing of what is now Israel did not involve large-scale genocide. About 7 million Palestinians are still living in refugee camps or have found temporary homes in other countries. It is not too late to do justice by them, and Ilan Pappé lists 5 assumptions or concepts that support his statement that Palestine is still the issue. He develops a project to bring about justice, respect for human rights, and mutual understanding. In part 1, he spoke of anti-Semitism and mentioned the claim that the colonization of Palestine was the antidote to anti-Semitism. Pappé says that it is indeed a terrible logic that anti-Semitism is now used to silence any criticism of Israel. In part 1, Pappé also points to the history of Western philosophy. He calls out the cruelty of modernity and of the Enlightenment. It was the Enlightenment that defined the claim of European/white superiority to any other civilization. In the settler colonialist project, this superiority over all indigenous cultures ironically once included a superiority over Jews and was used to justify the Holocaust. Finally, also in part 1, Pappé points to the problem of Islamophobia. When Britain, in the Balfour Declaration of 1917, took part of the Arab world and promised that the British Empire would do its utmost to grant a Jewish homeland there, the two major motives were both anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. The British liked the idea of Jews leaving Europe due to British anti-Semitism, and they looked forward to having a Western outpost in the middle of the Arab world due to British Islamophobia. Here now is the conclusion of the talk by Professor Ilan Pappé. Palestine is still the issue. He begins by addressing social justice and human rights.
Palestine is still the issue because it is also an issue of social justice. It is not surprising that you can see in various parts of the world workers who would demonstrate for better pay, for better conditions, who are engaged in industrial action, you will not be surprised to see them don themselves with the Palestinian flag. Because for them, Palestine is the ultimate symbol of injustice. Not only national injustice, not only political injustice, but also social injustice. And you have to ask yourself, why Palestine? Why is the Palestinian flag such an emblem for struggles who, at least on the face of it, have nothing to do with Palestine? And then you understand that it's not because these people think that the atrocities committed against the Palestinians are the worst. Not because they don't know about other cases of inhumanity. Not because they have singled out Israel as the worst rogue state in the world. They're very familiar with worse rogue states that exist. They are very knowledgeable of other inhumanities which are far worse than what the Palestinians had ever experienced and hopefully would ever experience. It's not out of ignorance that they decided that the Palestinian flag symbolizes a struggle for social justice. Social justice, more than anything else, is a struggle against double talk, against hypocrisy, against exceptionalism, against deception. And no other case of violation of human rights and civil rights can compare with the case of Palestine when it comes to exceptionalism, deception, and double talk. This is something we are all familiar with and we know. It is not only the cruelty of the occupier, the inhumanity of the colonizer. It is the pretense of those who support these actions that what we see is not a crime, but rather a war of defense, a democratic action, a justified moral policy. We are all familiar both with the double talk, with the language, with the fury, the pretentious fury, the righteous fury that goes along and accompanies the atrocities on the ground. It is this hypocrisy, more than anything else, that symbolizes for workers around the world the way that they are being treated by their employers, by the multinational corporation, and therefore you can see how many people today understand that the fate of the native who was a victim in a settler colonialist project is the fate of the worker today in the neoliberal system that we are living in. And we will see more and more fusion between the struggle against the inhumanity of shutting a factory, causing the end of a cycle of life in the United States, and the dispossession of the Palestinian from their villages, water resources, and their homeland. The logic of elimination and dehumanization is not just the logic of political movements, it also is the logic of heartless economic powers that control our life. And I think many people, especially in Europe, but I have seen it here in 2008 as well, understand the connection between Flint, Ferguson, Palestine, India, Pakistan, Africa. This is part you are not only struggle against the criminal policy, you are struggle against the narrative that claims that this is not a crime, that this is for the benefit of the people, that the whole discourse that pretends to improve people's life but actually destroys them is exemplified in Palestine on a daily, if not an hourly, basis. And I think that's why people all around the world see their own struggle so strongly associated and connected with the struggle for peace and justice in Palestine. And I'm very hopeful in this respect because I think we were misled by the movement in the United States in particular after the crisis of 2008. There was a very energetic response to the crisis. You're all familiar with that, in different towns, in different cities in the United States, and it petered out. So analysts in the ivory towers of academia said, well, it's gone. This is it. The crisis is over. The reaction to the crisis is over. I think they are totally wrong. This is just the beginning of a mass movement of young people who had enough with the cynicism of politics, whether it is domestic politics, financial politics, economic politics, or foreign politics. The way America behaves in the Middle East as a whole, the immunity it grants Israel, and the domestic policies are all seen as part of a cynical system of politics that has no moral backbone, has no set of values, and has lost the confidence of the people. It is quite ironic that both in England and in this country, the people who seem to represent at least partly this new young energy and wish for cleaner politics, for morality in politics, are represented by people who are nearly 80 years old. This is not good. May they live very long, but I would have liked to see 20 years old representing these ambitions. I will settle for 65. But there's something in the old values that these two gentlemen represent that the young people recognize as cleaner, as purer, as something that doesn't have the hypocrisy that politics has. And it's not surprising that in the case of Jeremy Corbyn in England, Palestine is the main issue on which he is attacked. And I can assure you, if Bernie Sanders would find the courage to go an extra mile of the 2 yards that he's already walked towards us, if he will take the extra mile, he would find that Palestine is the issue which will define him very much as any other topic he would decide to bring to this campaign. Finally, I would say, and this is very, very important, Palestine is the issue of human rights today. And this is the reason, I think, for so many of us, this is such an important historical juncture. And when I say us, I mean Palestinians, people who support the Palestinians, Israeli Jews, anyone who is involved as an NGO, as an activist, as someone who lives there or someone who was expelled from there. For us, 2016 is a very critical moment. The Palestinians will have to redefine their project of liberation and adapt it to 2016. It is very difficult, given the fragmentation, which is the greatest Zionist success. The Palestinians were fragmented to 5 different groups. Naturally, these groups developed, each one of them developed its own agenda. But we need a united Palestinian front. We need a united Palestinian representative bodies. None of the bodies that exist today represent faithfully the needs and aspirations of the Palestinian. They usually represent a slice of the Palestinian issue, and that kind of slice always serves well the Israelis and those who want to harm the Palestinian people. So I think this is the moment where you have to find a way of redefining the struggle for liberation in Palestine as the most important human rights and civil rights issue in the world. It is possible. The energy you hear from young people all around the world is there, ready to put Palestine at the center as the symbol for the struggles for human rights, civil rights, and social justice around the world. But you cannot do it without representation which is authentic and unified of the Palestinian people. The second thing that we have to take into account, 2016 should be the time where we all would be invited to the funeral of the two-state solution. The body is already in the morgue. Every now and then there is an American negotiator who takes the body out of the morgue, puts some life into it, like Jesus, and makes us feel as if it's still alive and tells us it's just around the corner. But apparently that corner is not on Earth, it's somewhere in Mars. It's time to stop this charade, not because it's right or wrong, because it really does not allow us to have a genuine discussion about the alternative. You cannot have a serious discussion of a different way forward if you still stick to a formula that is irrelevant, has nothing to do with the reality on the ground, is also not a just one. And I think in this respect, we have to try and persuade people not to be afraid and say, whether they were genuine supporters of the two-state solution, whether they were cynical supporters of the two-state solution, it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. It's a time to say, maybe it could have worked. Maybe it was a good idea. One can understand why even some Palestinians strongly supported it. In 2016, it's a waste of time. It's a waste of energy. It's a waste of human effort that is deeply needed, urgently needed, for finding a different way forward. You cannot do both things. You cannot protect a failed formula and talk of a new formula. You have to bury, you know, you have to bury the idea that, frankly speaking, is the idea that provided immunity for Israel to kill more Palestinians, to make more Palestinian refugees, to demolish Palestinian life and houses, to take more of Palestine and to render any just solution even more distant than it was before this ill-thought idea was introduced as the only way forward for peace and reconciliation in Palestine. So I think Palestine is still the issue because we need new thinking on Palestine. We need fresh thinking on Palestine. And it doesn't matter exactly how you're going to frame the idea of a one-state solution. It doesn't matter what exactly you bring to the table when you say, I want to replace the hegemonic language of peace that has helped Israel to continue to destroy Palestine rather than bring peace and reconciliation. It doesn't matter what you bring to the table, but bring something new to the table and don't rehash formulas and ideas that only benefited those who wanted to destroy Palestine, not those who wanted to bring peace and reconciliation. I say this with some depreciation because some of our best friends still believe in it. Some of them even religiously still believe in it. But it's time to talk to them as well and to tell them we need you on our side. We need every good person, inside and outside, a Palestinian and a non-Palestinian, to join forces with us and find out how do we respect the human rights, the civil rights of both the native population of Palestine and the settler community that now is in its third generation. How do we help them to build a political system that rectifies the evils of the past and promises good future life for everyone who is there and everyone who was expelled from there? This is a very important topic. And I will end by saying that this is a particularly important issue because I think it is connected to everything that goes on in the rest of the Middle East. We have to remember that before Zionism arrived in Palestine, although there was violence, and definitely there was violence, although there were wars in the Middle East, the logic, the two logics I was talking about, of dehumanization, of physical elimination, of elimination, were quite strange to the Middle East. I'm not idealizing the Middle East, I'm just saying that it was European enlightenment that invented settler colonialism that gave license in the name of enlightenment and progressiveness, the right to dehumanize other people to the extent that you could hunt them as animals in Australia and to kill them as if they were not human beings in the United States of America. This is something that is still an open wound, and Palestine is the bleeding part of that wound. And I think that you have to understand what happens in the rest of the Middle East if you can see that elimination and dehumanization of the Palestinians is not only possible because Israel is strong, is not only possible because Israel has the military capacity to do it, it is possible because Israel has an exceptional treatment in the international community, because it has a license to ethnically cleanse the Palestinians in 1948, and not one international body says anything. It has the license to expel 300,000 Palestinians from the West Bank in 1967, and nobody says a word, including within the more conscientious sections of the Western society. So the whole Middle East is watching and says, the problem is not inhumanity. The problem is not eliminating human beings or dehumanizing them. That is not the problem. The problem is whether you are a member of the exceptional club who is allowed to do it. And Israel is the sole member of this club in the Middle East. So if we want to have, and we need, everybody would agree in this hall, we need urgently a genuine conversation about human rights and civil rights in the Middle East. This is the most urgent problem in Syria, in Iraq. The inhumanity of the governments, the inhumanity of the groups that oppose the governments are at the heart of the bloodshed that we see today, together with imperial interests that exploit the situation in order to increase the flames of the fire rather than to try and bring it down. But you can never have a genuine conversation about human rights and civil rights as long as the exceptionalism of Israel continues. So if you want to talk to Syrians about human rights and civil rights, start in Palestine. Don't start in Damascus. If you want to talk about human rights in the Yemen, in Libya, start in Palestine. People will then believe that you really care about human rights, about civil rights, and Palestine could be the place where it's not only still the issue, but it also can push the issue of human rights and civil rights, and then maybe we will understand why it used to be called the Holy Land, because now it is anything, it is the Hollow Land and not the Holy Land, and we have to bring it back to its historical, ethical, and moral probably place in history by having this kind of conversation. So I will end by saying, don't let anyone tell you that Palestine, the Palestine issue, is less important than any other issue. Don't give up on Palestine and the Palestinians, and be brave enough to put aside slogans, formulas, solutions which are irrelevant, that are negative, that are destructive, and join the new energy that we are feeling coming out from many parts of Palestine and Palestinian life that wishes to create normal life, democratic life, human life for anyone who lives between the River Jordan and the Mediterranean, and anyone who was expelled from that homeland and wishes to come back. Thank you.
That was the conclusion of a 45-minute speech by Ilan Pappé, Israeli historian and currently director of the European Center for Palestine Studies at the University of Exeter in Britain. He was the keynote speaker at the May 2016 anniversary celebration of the Middle East Children's Alliance. That's a non-profit humanitarian aid organization. Ilan Pappé was recorded by Jeff Blankford on May 2, 2016, at the First Congregational Church in Berkeley, California. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. TUC Radio is free and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. For more information, call 707-463-2654 or go to TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org, for the address and donate buttons. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.